Okay, good evening, my brothers and sisters, Reverend Gatsio. Welcome to Singapore. Today we are indeed very privileged at Amitabha Buddhist Center to be able to invite Venerable Thubten Gatsio to come to Singapore and ABC here to start a series of teachings for the next coming 6 weeks. Venerable Thubten Gatsio has been a long familiar member of our center. Venerable Gatsio, I believe, has been a monk for over 40 years since the time of Lama Yeshe, and has been one of the pioneer Sangha members of the FBMT. I think his last visit to ABC was when we were at 494D, if you remember, in Lorong Geylang Road, about, I think, 20 years ago? Something like that, yes. I think we were very, very humble premises at that time, 110 square meter walk-up apartment, along 26, nothing like what we have today. So Gatsio has been here, really, over the years, been in touch with the center, and finally, we have been privileged to invite you to come to ABC to teach. So just much further ado, so let us just give a warm round of applause to welcome Reverend Gatsio to the Amitabha Buddhist Center. So consider ourselves very fortunate on this New Year's Eve, 2019, it's the start of the new year, that we're here to do the Dhamma purification and the Venerable Thubten Gatsio. Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm very honored to have been invited. Too loud? Very honored to have been invited here for these 6 weeks. I have seen the Amitabha Buddha Center grow from humble beginnings to what it is now, the most magnificent building and most magnificent students whose enthusiasm, generosity and willingness to practice Dharma is most inspiring for all of our centres around the world. We sort of look to Singapore as a great example to follow. So as you've heard, I came yesterday from Australia. It's so nice to be somewhere cooler than in Australia. Yesterday it was 43 degrees, and I think the next 2 days it's good. Where I live, it's going to be 45 degrees. So, on the equator, it's much cooler. So, tonight, we are going to talk about purification. I think this is the best New Year's Eve party of all. To turn our minds towards Dharma, which includes the reality of karmic cause and effect, which unfortunately most people don't understand, not aware of the prevalence of karma in our lives and the meaning of karma in our lives. So not being aware, most people don't do anything about it. But it's vital for us to advance spiritually, to grow towards our potential of complete freedom from the suffering world of death and rebirth, and our potential of attaining Buddhahood, full enlightenment, whereby we will be fully qualified to repay the kindness of other sentient beings, all of whom have been our mother, father, husband, wife, and so on in past lives. So if we don't understand karma, we will never be able to remove the main obstacle to achieving inner growth. Not just inner growth, but simply to achieve a happy rebirth, and even happiness in this life, although that is not considered to be a Dharma motivation to pursue happiness here and now, the minimum Dhamma motivation is to aspire to have a happy rebirth. But when we understand karma, then, and we do actions to overcome the karmic obstacles, naturally this life becomes happy, even though it may not be our primary goal. And as the lamas often say, to actively train our mind to overcome the obstacles in our mind to inner attainment is not easy. One has to be happy to be able to do that. So, from that point of view, happiness of this life is useful. Okay. So I've asked who's going to be here, old students, new students, and I've been told everybody, some are new, some are old. So I thought to initially give a simple talk about karma, what it is, and generate the motivation to do some purification practices tonight. You see that we have an image of Shakyamuni Buddha. So later on tonight we will do the meditation practice of imagining the Buddha in front and reciting the Buddha's mantra, Tayata Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Soha, with the visualization practice of purification. The many mantras we could do, Vajrasattva, we could do many types of actions, but all of them depend upon what's really happening in our mind, and to really purify the accumulation of negative karma. It all depends upon having sincere remorse or regret for the harmful actions we've performed, the ones that we know about in this life, and the ones we don't know about that we created in past lives, but still our mind carries the karmic potencies even from past lives, the ones that we want to eliminate. So it begins with understanding our mind, what we are as a person, and what we are as a person depends upon understanding our mind and our body. Because each of us has our own name, mostly given to us by our parents when we were born, or close to when we were born. And we were a new baby, and with the very act of our parents giving us our name, we as a person, as an individual, came into existence according to our name. Right? Of course, we existed before we were given our name, but we didn't carry our name. And when we meet each other, we exchange names, or we're introduced by somebody else who tells us the name of the other person we're meeting and tells the other person our name. So we get to know each other in dependence upon our names. Name is given to the combination of body and mind. When we check up, what am I? What is the person who we are and the person to whom we've been introduced? Then, as it becomes difficult, well, what am I? I once went to South Korea and joined a retreat with a Zen master, and he told me to meditate on the koan, or what am I, And after a week, each of the students had an interview with the master. And so when I went to see him, I began, he asked, well, what have you discovered? And I began to explain Lama Tsongkhapa's presentation of emptiness in the person. And he looked at me very sternly, and he had this big gnarled stick on his table. He says, I beat you 36 times with my stick. Because intellectually, in that tradition, there is no intellectual answer. One has to have a sort of a higher insight into emptiness, which is beyond verbalization. But in our tradition, and of tradition of Lama Tsongkhapa, given to us by our teachers, in order to really understand emptiness, we have to know intellectually what we are not before we can understand what we are. So, we are an individual who exists, as I've mentioned, in dependence upon the name given to us by our parents on this body and mind. There is nothing more than that which is the person. In other words, we conventionally exist. If we existed more concretely, more solidly than mere conventional, if there were a real me inside, not just the body, not just the mind, but the real true me, then that would mean that we would exist independently of a name, independently of the body and mind, an entity in our own right. Unfortunately, we were all born unaware of what we are as individuals, and we instinctively have the thought that there is a real true me inside that is there even when we start thinking still in our mother's womb and when we're born and the baby experiences pain as the mother does. So the baby is very painful to be born. And so the baby thinks, what's happening to me? And so from the very start, there's this mistaken belief in a real true me. But that's what we're empty of. Not knowing that, we become attached to whatever pleases me, mother's soft voice, mother's body, the caresses, whatever is pleasant, we grasp that as mine, and whatever unpleasant, we push away with aversion. And so the foundation of attraction, attachment, and aversion is established in our mind, and we act according to those emotions. We've all seen very, very young children who, to get what they want, they get angry. They throw a tantrum. And mother and father look at each other and say, well, he didn't get it from me. Must have got it from you. It's anger. We don't teach our children to be angry, or attached. But we were all angry and attached. We learned to modify our behavior to get what we wanted. We learned to manipulate mum and dad and brothers and sisters and grandmother and grandfather to get what we want. There's always the thought, me, I want, I don't want. And so we created actions to hurt others, physically, verbally, even mentally. We had rivalry towards our siblings for the affection of mum and dad and other relatives. We had possessiveness to my toys and jealousy towards others' toys and so on. So we created many actions to hurt others out of our self-centeredness. Those actions brought an immediate result. The other person was hurt in some way, deliberately from us. An inner result of those actions of attachment or anger, jealousy, pride, was a potential, a potency established upon our stream of consciousness, our mind. And that potency, it's like a seed or a potency carried upon the mind, has the potential to bring about a distant result. And that distant result means that it connects the mind with a future experience. In a big sense, when we die, potencies ripen to determine what type of rebirth we will take. Not only that, potency, once the rebirth is taken, these potentials from our behavior have the power to bring about similar behavior in future lives, like if we were angry, greedy, proud, or so on, then we have the tendency to be angry, greedy, proud in future lives. We can also experience the ripening of a potency in terms of our experience, like if we steal something from somebody else in future lives, things could be stolen from us, or we can lose our property, we can be destroyed by the environment and so on. So this is the cause and effect process that is labeled karma. Karma simply means action. And so from the causal side, there are physical actions, verbal actions, and mental actions. They're not all negative. There's virtuous actions when we are motivated to please others and to be kind and generous and help others. We also create karmic potencies, and they can lead to virtuous ones, a happy rebirth and happy experiences and a happy personality in future lives as a result of past actions. So that's the causal side. The intermediate between the cause and the result is the duration of that potency being born on our mind stream. And then the resultant side is the future experience. So we have, we're constantly generating impulses or intentions to do things, and we're constantly establishing a collection of virtuous and non-virtuous potencies on our mind stream. And the continual unfolding of our life is the continual ripening of countless karmic potencies. The slightest pleasure that we receive, sensory pleasure, mental pleasure, is a result of virtuous karmic potentials ripening. And the slightest pain and the greatest pain is the result of the ripening of of non-virtues or negative karmic potentials. So our whole life is actually the unfolding of karma, our personal karma. We don't, it's impossible to experience another person's karma. It's impossible to transfer our karma. You know, if we want to give our good karma to others, we can't do it. Our mind stream has created the karma, and only our mind stream can experience the result. But we don't have to experience the result. The result, the strength of the potency can be weakened or completely destroyed by purification practices. This is in terms of negative karma, which we don't want to experience. And that's what we'll be doing tonight, one practice to purify. So the purification of our karma, that is something that each of us can do if we know how, and each of us must do if we want to grow out of suffering towards happiness. And if you think about it, to purify our minds is something that you and I can do, but the Buddhas cannot do that. This is something we can do which Buddhas can't do, because only we have access to our mind. Buddhas don't have access, they know our mind, they know completely where we're at, and they know our past karmas. And because they have universal compassion, they would want most of all to purify our negative karma, but they can't, because it's our mind, we created it. But what they do is teach us, they show us how. First they show us what karma is, and then they show us how to purify negative karma and achieve the realizations on the path. When I first met the Lamas, was way back in 1974. And prior to that, I'd been working as a doctor in Australia and in England and New Guinea. And I was aware from my experience of working with sick people that most people's problems were mental problems, and not just even their physical problems had there was a mental causative condition behind even most physical problems. So I knew there was something major about the mind that I didn't know about and Western medicine didn't know about. It wasn't that which attracted me to go to Nepal and meet the Lamas. It was my girlfriend, actually. She wanted to go because our group of friends in Melbourne, Australia, had met the Lamas and were encouraging everybody to go to Nepal, meet Lama Yeshe, Lama Zopa Rinpoche. But I had no religious background. My worldview was and very much remains scientific worldview. And so what happened? Immediately I could accept the psychology that the Lamas were teaching. But karma and rebirth were a bit beyond my understanding. And it took me, I knew I had to check up and find out whether, from my experience, I could accept karma and rebirth as realities before I become a Buddhist. But you know, becoming a monk was after that. There's no way I wanted to become a monk. at that stage. So I travelled and with my girlfriend, and I went back to England. She stayed in India. She met Goenkaji, a great Burmese meditation master, and she was happy to stay and become a student, a follower of Goenka. But I went overland back to England to check up and work in hospitals around London and so on. And I can't say exactly what it was that convinced me that karma and rebirth were true, but it happened. And I went back to India. I met Goenka, did some meditation with him. That was very good. And then I went to Bodh Gaya and sat beneath the Bodhi tree and decided to become a Buddhist. It wasn't until even 6 months later when Lama Yeshe and Lama Tupnazopa went to Australia and gave another 4-week course that under the instructions, I spoke to Lama Yeshe. I said, I really need to meditate on the love room, the teachings. So he gave me advice how to do a personal retreat. And for 3 months, I built a cabin and lived in the bush in Australia, didn't see anybody for 3 months. And after that, decided to become a monk. And it was really the driving force was the stronger and stronger conviction in the reality of karmic cause and effect. If it's true, you've got to do something about it. Don't hang around. Don't pray to be reborn in the pure land where you can then practice Dharma. We have to do it now. So important. Whilst we can, whilst we're human, while we have this human life, has our body, our brain, our nervous system gives us the intelligence to understand the difference between virtue and non-virtue. And we have the discriminating wisdom to modify our behavior to establish a code of ethical conduct based upon our own understanding. You know, there are the laws. We can force people to be moral through the law. But that's okay, but it's not good enough. Because it has to come from inside, from our own determination, our own purpose, to live in a moral, ethical manner, to not be greedy, not be angry, not be proud, jealous, angry, and to see others as not different from ourselves. And when others hurt us, to not respond with anger, but to respond with compassion and kindness through wisdom. It doesn't mean that we become a doormat, completely allowing ourselves to be pushed around, to be cheated, stolen from, and hurt by others. Wisdom gives us a whole spectrum of skillful ways of behaving, of reacting to the adversities of life, so that we don't allow our mind to fall into selfishness and anger and so on, and we can maintain. Even if we can't have love and compassion, and that's hard for somebody who's hurting us, but we can have equanimity. We can have a calm, balanced mind. Okay. So I don't, as I say, it took me over a year to come to terms with karma and rebirth. And I don't expect those who are new to accept it would be wrong to accept, as Buddha said, don't accept what I say just out of faith or because I have reputation and so on. Go home, check up the meaning, the deep meaning of the words in terms of your own experience, and then come to your own decision on how you want to live your life. In the teachings on karma, I have to go back to talk about the mind, because the mind is the basis. So the definition of mind, which you won't find a definition of mind in Western psychiatry or psychology. If you ask a psychologist, a psychiatrist to define mind, you get a whole spectrum of definitions. But they use the term mind. Well, we've got to define it. So there are two defining characteristics of mind: clarity and awareness. Awareness means a subjective experience of things through our senses, our five senses, through our thoughts and ideas, our memories, our knowledge. We are aware of things. That subjective experience is mind. Mind and consciousness are synonyms. The term clarity in the definition of mind means that when we are aware of something, we have an inner, the object of which we are aware appears in the mind. The mind creates an image of whatever we are aware of. Like, if I give you a name of somebody, Donald Trump, immediately you connect a mental image of Donald in your mind. That, so yes, yes, I know Donald Trump. There's a mental image that occurs in your mind. And whatever, even our sensory experiences are associated with this mental image of what we are aware of. So this is the functioning activity of mind or consciousness: being aware of something and having a mental image. Within our awareness, there's a whole spectrum of emotions. Now, when our senses, when we're seeing things, hearing things, smelling, tasting and touching, we have simple sensory experience. It could be pleasure or displeasure, whether it's a nice thing or not nice thing. But there are no emotions like anger, attachment, pride, jealousy. They don't manifest with our five senses. They manifest with our sixth sense, which in Buddhism we call the mental consciousness. So mental consciousness is awareness partly independent upon our sensory experience and then dependent upon our knowledge, our memory, and our emotions. So they could be constructive emotions of generosity, love, compassion, wisdom, patience, and destructive emotions: selfishness, anger, attachment, pride, jealousy, and so on. So it's when our mental consciousness is coloured by emotions and we do things under those emotional attitudes that we create karmic potencies born upon the mind stream. So I say mind stream because awareness is not static. Awareness goes from the past to the present to the future. It's a continual passage through time. Even before this life, there was a stream of consciousness in a previous life which experienced death, and then the intermediate state, which were one life and the next, and then rebirth in our mother's womb. So we're all born with a new body coming from the, you know, the shared genetic information of our mother and father, but we're not born with a new mind. We have second-hand minds. Right? Our mind came from the previous life, and it brought with it all of the unripened karmic potentials, all the seeds of our emotions, constructive emotions, destructive emotions. And so the new personality, the mental qualities of this new life, have three sources. Like in, you know, in Western biology, we talk about the personality being derived from nature, like genetic background, and nurture, the experience in life. So Buddhism agrees, yes, but there's a third thing, the baggage that we inherit with our mind from past lives. That determines the mind and personality of the new life. And it's changing. Nothing's fixed. Constantly, different experiences. We're having, meeting different people. We're meeting the Buddha's teachings. Bring about huge changes in the personality and the mind. So, that just gives a general picture. Now, we should not be passive and rely upon external circumstances to give us peace and happiness. We have to be active and work with our mind, just as our body, when our body gets sick, then we actively look after it. If it's unhealthy, if it's unfit, then we go to the gym, we exercise, we eat good food, we take medicines, we have surgery, whatever is necessary to keep the body functioning well. We don't hesitate. We have to have the same attitude towards our mind. We have to recognize our innate selfishness and check up the thought, why am I doing this action? Is it, am I following self-centered, greedy, personal objectives? Or am I doing something out of kindness, love, compassion to help others? And so, recognizing the danger of self-centeredness and anger and greed, attachment, then we can drop that. We don't have to follow the impulse to do that negative action. We can change. We can then, instead, usually when we have the thought to hurt somebody, we meditate on the bad qualities, you know. And aversion sees people as much more negative than they actually are. We exaggerate the bad qualities. We ignore the good qualities. We even superimpose bad qualities which aren't even there. And we make ourselves more and more antagonistic, more and more angry towards them. And we act, and so we do some of those terrible things. And the other person says, why? What did I do? What are you doing to me? We're not actually doing something to hurt the person as they are. We're doing something to hurt the person as we imagine them to be, wrongly imagine them to be. They're much worse from our negative projection than they actually are. And when we're attached, the same thing. We're incredibly attached. Oh, this is the love of my life. This is the most perfect person. I want my friend. I want to be near them. And we exaggerate their positive qualities. And we reject positive qualities on them which don't exist. Then, as time goes by, we see that they're not the person we imagine them to be. They're not as perfect, as beautiful, as pleasing as we believe them to be. So who do we blame? Them. We don't blame ourselves for this totally exaggerated fantasy of who they are. And so our attachment becomes aversion. And we get angry towards them for not living up to our projections. Crazy. But this is life. This is what we do. We're all crazy. As Lava Yeshe used to say, you're all schizophrenic. You're deluded. Wake up. Okay. In Buddhism, you may have heard the term that each person has the root of virtue. The root of virtue means the accumulation of positive qualities in our mind stream, positive actions and positive emotions, you know, kindness, love, compassion, and so on, and the karmic potencies resulting from those actions. When we get angry, when we have a strong root of virtue, we really have sincerely benefited others, our self-esteem becomes very solid. Our self-confidence is very powerful from helping others. But when we get angry, we totally weaken, we obstruct our accumulation of virtue. And then our self-esteem becomes vulnerable. Like, we might feel that we have been insulted by somebody. And so we plan an attack upon them, a verbal attack, abuse, and you know, we try to, this is what our friend Donald Trump does, is character assassination. I don't like that. So, but that, and that increases our self-esteem, because that's what we wanted. We wanted to destroy this person's character in the eyes of others. But that is vulnerable. You could be impeached. You're vulnerable because you have boosted your self-confidence by hurting others, putting others down. So, we have to be aware that the root of virtue is the real self-confidence and self-esteem to be developed. And it doesn't come from nice clothes, nice car, from wealth, a nice partner, a nice job. Any of the worldly things that we all strive for to enhance our self-esteem. Without any of those, the so-called good things in life, deliberately putting a smile on somebody else's face is more valuable in terms of self-confidence, self-esteem, than any of the other goals which our whole society is geared towards attaining. We have to think about that. Okay. Now, I've mentioned the accumulation of non-virtuous karmic potentials on our mind streams, which we, if we know how, we can weaken them, eventually eliminate them. So there are four powers that we can employ, that Buddha taught, that we can employ to overcome our negative, our, instead of our root of virtue, our root of non-virtue, right? The negative karma. So the first I've mentioned is sincere regret. So this is not guilt. Guilt is like an inhibiting, paralyzing sense of I'm bad, I'm awful. You know, no self-esteem. It is strongly associated with grasping at the self-image, the mistaken self-image, the real true me. The real true me is bad, but there is no real true me. Remember, we are just conventionally established by our name on this body and mind. The body's not me, the mind's not me, the combination is not me, but they're suitable to be given the name that my parents gave to their baby when I was born. Think about that. There's so much freedom. We don't have to maintain this concrete self-image, the good me, that we want everybody to like, to love, to praise, to admire. That's our problem. If we see that we're empty of being what we think we are, a huge burden is lifted off our shoulders. So the power of regret is not guilt. It comes from understanding karmic cause and effect and having the strength to admit we made a mistake. We were wrong to hurt others out of our selfish motivations. It was not good. They cried, and what did I get out of it? You know, I just boosted my reputation, and that didn't make me feel really happy. So regret comes from wisdom, understanding karmic cause and effect. The second power, when we want to purify our negative actions, is to think of the type of action. Like, in general, negative actions are caused by hurting somebody, sentient beings. May not be humans, even we'd like to go fishing and kill fish, or we kill insects because we hate mosquitoes or whatever. Sentient beings are the object of negative actions, or the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. We may have been highly critical of monks or nuns or the teachings. We may have done something to harm the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, or the representatives. So the second power is to generate compassion for sentient beings. So it's called the power of the basis. So the basis of negative actions, if it's sentient beings, then generate compassion and love. If it's the three jewels, refuge, confidence, and faith in the teachings of the Buddha himself, and the Sangha. So we reflect upon that, and we strengthen our determination to maintain a code of ethics, of moral behavior, influenced by the teachings. And morality in Buddhism means non-harmfulness. non-harmfulness towards others. The third opponent power is an action, some type of action. A virtuous action, any virtuous action. If we think of something we've done negatively, we do a virtuous action to oppose that. It could be reciting mantras, reciting holy scriptures, creating statues, printing Dharma texts, helping others, simply whatever action to help others, saving lives, healing the sick, giving food to the hungry, shelter and clothing to the poor. All of these virtuous actions, they oppose the action, the negative action. And finally, there's the power of restraint, of consciously restraining our mind from doing the same action in the future, whether it's a vow or just a personal promise, I'm not going to do that again, I will avoid doing those actions again. So those are the four opponent powers to overcome karma, negative karma. And we're going to meditate on Shakyamuni Buddha now to put this into practice. So just, I'll describe the meditation. We begin by reflecting upon karma and generating the thought of regret. And then we're going to do something about it. This is the action of reciting the mantra. So we do this in dependence upon imagining in space. Remember, mind always takes a picture. There's always a mental picture of whatever we are aware of. So we imagine Shakyamuni Buddha as it is in the painting. We were taught this meditation in my first course at Kofun Monastery back in 1974. And I've told you my background. So I couldn't visualize Shakyamuni Buddha. You know who I visualized? Charles Darwin. Well, he was my hero. Okay. You can visualize Charles Darwin. So Shakyamuni Buddha, as depicted, is sitting upon a golden throne decorated with many jewels. The gold represents the Dhamma, the teachings, and the jewels represent the realizations of the path. The throne, or you can visualize, is supported by eight snow lions, that two on each side, and these represent the eight bodhisattvas who were in Buddha's retinue, who were actually enlightened, but they manifest as bodhisattvas, Manjushri, Avalokiteshvara, Maitreya, Samantabhadra, Siddhagaba, the eight bodhisattvas. On top of the throne is a fully open lotus. So the lotus flower represents the attainment of renunciation, the mind which turns away from grasping at mundane sources of pleasure and happiness, and turns towards the liberation, nirvana, and enlightenment. So it means that renunciation is always, when it's fully developed, the fully open lotus of renunciation, the mind cannot be distracted, cannot fall back into the folly of pursuing peace and happiness in dependence upon the mundane experiences of life. From the moment we wake up, to not even when we go to sleep, but also in our dreams, we can have the mind of renunciation. Upon that is a moon representing the conventional bodhicitta, the determination to guide all beings out of suffering by achieving enlightenment. And on top of that, a golden sun representing the wisdom, understanding reality of emptiness. So this are the cushions upon which the Buddha sits. He's wearing the robes of a monk, right hand and his right knee in what we call the earth-touching mudra, which he demonstrated when he manifested enlightenment at Bodh Gaya. Left hand at his waist in the mood of meditation and holding a monk's bowl filled with nectar, ambrosia, nectar of long life, the panacea, I forget the other two. His body is gold color, indicating the Dharma, radiant, shining gold. Hair is at the curls tied up in a top knot. On his face is in concentration, very peaceful smile looking towards you. All right, so that's what we're going to visualize, and then I will describe during the meditation the visualization of purification. And as you purify, you imagine that the negative karmas are in the form of black liquid or black light, and light from Buddha's heart cleanses your mind from this darkness of negative karma and its causes, the disturbing emotions. So sit comfortably, if as you can. Try and keep your back straight. And I'll describe that visualization as we do it. First, just focus your whole attention on the coming and going of your breath, the sensation of the air entering and leaving your nostrils, just breathing normally. Hold your attention on the breath and don't let your thoughts wander anywhere else. Imagine in the space in front of you, about an arm's length from your body, a large, square, golden throne decorated with many jewels. Feel that you're imagining this from your heart, not from your eyes, but you're seeing it from the root of your mind at your heart. If you can, you can visualize the 8 snow lions. If you can't, don't worry about them. Now imagine the large, fully opened, multicolored lotus flower on top of the throne. Renunciation. in the center of that lotus, lying flat like a coin, is a white moon. The altruistic mind of bodhicitta. And upon that is a disc, a golden shining disc of the sun, representing the wisdom realizing emptiness. Seated upon the golden sun disk is Shakyamuni Buddha. If you have a personal teacher, it is your teacher in the aspect of Shakyamuni Buddha. Legs crossed, right hand on his right knee, left hand at his waist, holding a blue monk's bowl filled with nectar. He wears the saffron robes of a monk. On his face, a peaceful, serene smile looking at you and all sentient beings who you imagine surround you. His body shines with golden light. Think of all the negative karmas accumulated by yourself and by others in this life and in past lives. Imagine that your bodies are filled with black light or black liquid of negative karma. And with sincere regret and compassion, imagine that you kneel before Shakyamuni Buddha and on behalf of all the sentient beings who surround you, you make the heartfelt request to be purified, yourself and others, to be purified of all negative karmas and their suffering results. Feel strongly that Shakyamuni Buddha is delighted with your request and from his heart, he sends out countless rays of blissful white light that enter the bodies of yourself and all others and cleanse away the darkness of negative karmas. Feel the blissful light entering your body, becoming oneness with your mind as it's progressively purified. If you know the mantra, we can recite it together. If you don't know the mantra, then just do the imagination of purification. Jayata Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha. Jayata Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha. Tayata 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 Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha. Feel that your mind and the minds of all others have been completely purified of all negative karmic potencies. And your minds are oneness with the blissful white light that fills your body. Now imagine that once again you kneel before Shakyamuni Buddha with your hands together at your heart. And you request on behalf of all sentient beings that he bestow upon yourself and all others all of the realizations of the path from the very beginning, devoting yourself to a qualified teacher up to the end, the final attainment of enlightenment. Imagine that Shakyamuni Buddha is delighted with your request. And now from his heart, he sends out countless rays of blissful, golden-colored light, all the realizations of the path, which enter your mind and the minds of all others. And you all progress along the path and achieve your full potential of Buddhahood. Continue with this visualization as you say the mantra. Tayata Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha. 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 Imagine that yourself and all sentient beings have achieved enlightenment. And all the sentient beings around you dissolve away into the blissful Dharmakaya mind of Buddhahood. Just remains yourself, also enlightened, and Shakyamuni Buddha. Focus your attention on the throne with the snow lions and imagine that it dissolves into light which absorbs up into the lotus flower. then the lotus dissolves into light and absorbs into the moon. And the moon dissolves and absorbs into the sun. And the sun absorbs into Shakyamuni Buddha. Now imagine that Shakyamuni Buddha comes to your crown, just above the top of your head, facing forwards. Then he too dissolves into blissful light that flows down to your heart, becoming oneness with your mind at your heart, totally oneness. You have attained your goal of Buddhahood, and now you do what you intended to do by becoming a Buddha. From your heart, imagine that you send out rays of light, healing, blissful, white rays of light, purifying others in golden rays of light, giving all sentient beings in the entire universe the realizations of the path. So from your heart you radiate out this healing and blissful wisdom light, touching the hearts of all sentient beings in the universe and repaying their kindness to you when they were your mothers in past lives. Then, in your mind, you dedicate the positive energy of this meditation to all sentient beings by thinking that from now on, even in my ordinary life, I shall play the role of a Buddha, full of compassion and love and wisdom, living my life for others, not just for me. And through this, I am reborn in the best places possible to complete my path to actual enlightenment. So with that thought, you can now relax and stop the meditation. So again, thank you for coming to our New Year's Eve party tonight. As I said, it's so much better than singing, dancing, drinking, being happy, which most people feel is their right on such an evening. But may they be happy, but may they have the right causes for happiness. And again, thanks for inviting me here tonight. I look forward to meeting you again during the next 6 weeks. Thank you.